Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth. And you know what? Thanks again for joining us, guys. We got ourselves a juicer of a show here. We're joined by comedian extraordinaire, Miss Ashley Pontius. First time on the show. She's got some good stories about working with the federal government. And she gets along with Jeremy. She checked all the boxes. But if I could ask you guys from the bottom of my heart, I know you guys are busy. COVID-19 has you working from home or not working at all, so we appreciate every moment that you spend with us. But you haven't done so already, hop on the Apple Podcasts, the iTunes, the Stitcher, Spotify, whatever platform you listen to us on, and drop us a 5-star rating. It takes you a little bit of time, costs you absolutely nothing, and means the absolute world to us. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn that volume up to 11, and get ready for the Prince of Darkness.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Say things like, I'm doing the dishes right now. I'm actually vacuuming the baby. I'm also changing the baby's diaper.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Hot. That shit's hot, dude. There's nothing that gets my wife slipping out of a fucking chair faster than saying I took out the garbage. Let me tell you.
No, that's gonna end.
Mine is definitely like, tell me about your 401k. Ooh, tell me, do you have options? Are you 100% vested yet?
I really want you to say something about my how hot my latest score on Call of Duty made you.
Hey, I feel like that 401k conversation is really just him starting to cry as he looks at his portfolio. Like, oh God. Like, nobody's 401k is good right now. I have one of the guys in Die Laughing, Sean Gabbert, good friend of mine, shout outs. We make fun of him because he's clearly rich, okay? I've been to his home. He has at least a million-dollar home in D.C., like, in, like, the heart of D.C. He just downplays it and doesn't flash it, but we always ask him, like, every time we see a new market crash thing, we'll share it with the group, and we're like, wow, Sean's only down to $10 million now.
Like, what a loser.
So, welcome to Quality Time, everybody. Just a recording show that is not live at all. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth. Welcome back once again from fucking coronavirus central Maryland here. Before we introduce my co-host who's here every week, we have a special guest this week, comedian extraordinaire, Miss Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you, darling?
I'm good, thank you. I thank God for rich parents.
Nice. Hell yeah. It must be fun. How's your privileged life has been unaffected so far?
Yeah, pretty much. I get to work from home. My parents have a pool. I eat their food. It's great.
Nice. And joining us over the internet here, my blood, my brother, the man who's not allowed to enter our home for probably another 2 months, Mr. Jeremy Woodworth. How are you, sir?
Hey guys, how you doing? I'm actually a special guest for the show.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who's joining us this evening?
It's me, Kevin Costner from Prince of Darkness.
Kevin Costner from Prince of Darkness? Or did you watch Prince of Thieves? Is that what you did? By accident, yeah, you watched the wrong Prince movie?
Yeah, I play Robin Hood and I go through a mirror.
Good bit, Jeremy. Good bit.
I'm Kevin Costner. I'm actually maybe Kevin McDonald. So.
Now you're Kevin. Now you're Norm McDonald. You're Kevin Norm McDonald.
Kevin Norm McDonald. Yeah.
Hey, it's me. Look at this. It's funny because it's bigger than a regular hat. There, huh?
Man. Funny hat.
Man, you know, Jeremy. Sometimes the characters that you come up with are so strong and so deep that we're not even on your level yet.
By the way, you made me wait so long that I fell asleep, and I was literally dreaming I was at theaters working with standees.
No, you were dreaming about your old job?
Pretty much, and I was trying to steal up the latest Star Wars standee and figuring out which parts I wanted to steal. And also, I was at the theater and there were like blacks getting into fights, which is part of my anxiety. So.
These are your regular dreams. Okay, that's good to know. Good to know.
Oh, it's pretty much reality also.
She's like, actually, I just looked
out.
So
wait, you used to work for a movie theater?
I work for pretty much every movie theater doing the advertisements for the movies.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Oh, okay. I worked for Regal in college, so that's why I was like, I get it.
Which Regal?
In Hagerstown, Maryland.
Oh, wow. That's way out. Never made it there.
Well, that's where I'm from. Like, that's where I'm coming from broadcasting. So.
Cool.
Yeah. I like that Jeremy was impressed. Like, Hagerstown, man, I've never been to that one. Is it cool? Do you guys get, you guys got popcorn there?
No, I went to the Regal in Frederick, like on the rigs, though. That was the West.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Jeremy used to build standees as a subcontractor, and so this giant Sasquatch of a man would just come up and be like, here, I'm here to set up your goods and services. And everybody would be like, please leave immediately. And then he's like, no, I can't get $20 unless I set up this Power Ranger standee.
$20. I literally still have a boxed unused Rogue One sitting in my front porch.
That's hilarious.
You are such a rogue, Jeremy. Such a rogue.
The movie Rogue One.
You know, I know what you're talking about, man. We got it. We got it.
Part of the Star Wars universe, dude.
Rogue One honestly is probably the best Star Wars film. I'll say it. Okay.
And they all die.
I'll do it.
For Carrie Fisher, because she's like animated at the end.
I like animated Carrie Fisher. The way I like to remember her, in full CGI, looking like she's about to join a fucking game of Fortnite. It's very...
Like she'd only done heroin once in her life.
I like Carrie. I loved her in The Burbs as Tom Hanks' wife. I love her. Like, she's done so many other parts I wish she was, like, known for.
Yeah, you know, the Carrie Fisher I remember was always the drop-dead Fred Carrie Fisher. That was my...
That's crazy, yeah.
Where she lived on a houseboat.
To me, she'll always be the scary almost wife of John Belushi in Blues Brothers that tried to kill him constantly.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Or what about... You know what she was too? She was also the nun in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back that says, "Do you go by the book?" And they offer to fucking blow that nun. That was Carrie Fisher. Yes.
I would so sink my face into Carrie Fisher's crotch in like a heartbeat.
You mean her now?
Well, you know, I'm not really into munging, but maybe even for Carrie Fisher, you know.
Okay.
Hell yeah, dude!
I want to know where you're at.
Jeremy,
y'all know what munging is?
No. Can you tell us what this is? Do I have to Urban Dictionary or will you let us know?
It's probably the most vile thing that anybody can ever do on the face of the planet. And I don't know, hopefully only like a handful of people have done such a horribly unhuman, disgusting thing. Let's just say that the Urban Dictionary says you play against your buddy, and if you lose, you go to a graveyard, dig up a body, put your mouth on the naughty bits of a dead woman.
Naughty bits,
and the other person stomps on the person's belly and pushes all the fluids and gases.
So there's a legit game for basically the entire movie Drag Me to Hell.
Pretty much. Yeah. I don't know. If any person has ever done this, it's like, that's like a straight ticket to hell. So
I
never anybody should ever do.
Well, later today, I think that can be the stipulations of our game portion of the Prince of Darkness episode here. You get four wrong answers in a row. Guess who's fucking chomping on fucking maggot interns?
I'd also put it in my top five list of most horrible things to do, even when on heroin. So,
I mean, I've seen things on the internet like... Like the girls who do two girls, one cup, they do that, right? There's what, $60?
Yeah,
they
it's do top that. Five. Yeah, but it's fake. You can tell it's yogurt.
Yeah, it's fake.
That's fake? What are they
Nobody takes a mouthful of poo and like, okay, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. No, well, we say that, but I love the guy who founded, what was it, McAfee or whatever, McCaffrey.
Yeah.
Yeah,
John McAfee. Like, yeah, he's a caca guy.
Yeah, he would have girls sit over the hammock and crap through the hammock into his mouth.
Hammock crap. That was a great film.
God, yeah. I mean, that's
another four of the series.
That's the sign of real wealth, where you've done every sexual act, where the only very specific thing that gets you off is girls shitting through a hammock on you. You like? Do you realize like how far down the list of things you have to do? Where it's just like, this is it. He there's more below he's willing to go do eventually when hammock shitting is lost. Like that documentary that's on Netflix, I assume that's where you got got that info, right? Yeah, I watched that.
Some of it, yeah.
I mean, that was like 2016. 2020 John McAfee. I mean, that guy, he's fucking, he's letting fucking turds fly into his mouth as a girl shits that's skydiving in front of him now. Like, that's the level he's at.
I was going to say, he's now doing like human centipede. He's just like ass to mouth. Like, he's, and like Jimmy Buffett's playing in the background.
Jimmy Buffett fucking scores his centipede action. That's hot.
How I got here, I haven't a clue.
Wasted away again in Centipederville.
Jimmy Buffett's always standing there playing guitar after a couple hours, like, dude, I'm tired of playing the same song on my guitar. Can I sit down for a while? You keep playing that guitar, Jimmy Buffett. I got some more poop coming through, some more hammers.
Dingleberries in paradise.
Oh, has Ashley heard the Dingleberry song?
I have.
She's heard the Dingleberry song. We're not playing the Dingleberry song again.
Oh my God. I was in my kitchen cooking like a nice meal, and I'm kind of newly integrated into your podcast, and I love it so much. And I'm cooking this nice meal, feeling like a real woman, and I'm loudly playing it through my speakers, and all of a sudden the Dingleberries. And everybody lost their appetite. And I have this giant butcher knife, and I'm like laughing hysterically, and I'm like,
oh, that fucking rocks so hard. Hey, Jeremy, back to your thing before when you were talking about munging. Like, the only word about mung that I knew was back in my rugby playing days at Salisbury University, one of my friends, we'll call Darsh. Darsh came over, and we usually, you know, you razz the new guys, and he comes back from his health class, and he's like, hey, yo, I just learned what the fuck the word, I was at a birthing class where I'm learning about the female anatomy. He was just like, do you know what mung is? And we were like, no. He's like, yo, mung is like the fucking shit that comes out of a woman after she breaks her, like, water when she's giving birth, so all that fucking baby juice is called mung. And so we had a new guy on our team, and he immediately gave him the name mung with like not telling him that. So this kid's name was just mung. Okay, we were calling him mung. Now what he thought is that mung, we were calling him mung because he looked like he was Mongolian, right? So his understanding is that he's, oh, they're just kind of, it's a fun racial slur they're throwing at me. Well, he goes and tells his parents and his stuff. It's game one, right? So it's like the start. We have like the main game, and then afterwards, there's usually a second game where new guys get to play and stuff like that. His family's on the sideline. They're going. They're cheering. Go Hmong. Go Hmong. One has a sign that says "Go Hmong. Go." Okay. And we are in tears laughing about this. After the whole game is over, Hmong ended up breaking his collarbone during that game, okay? And he tells him, he was just like, yo, why did your fucking mom write that fucking Go Hmong sign? He's like, you know, guys, because I'm Mongolian? He's like... He got to tell him while he's like basically all numbed up in a fucking sling. He's like, nah, dude, that's the shit in a woman's pussy that the baby juice like suspends in. And his face went from glee to like, my parents had a sign. Like, it just all hit him at once. It was really beautiful.
That's horrible.
Anyway, I never heard from him. I never got to hear from Hmong again after that. Unfortunately, he quit the team, and I don't know why, but it was sad.
It's just like the Lone Ranger. After all those years, you find out that the Kemosabe means horse's ass eventually. So,
aye, it does. Aye, it does, Jeremy.
Damn that Indian. Okay.
So, Ashley, I didn't know now you're part of the federal government. What are you doing in the government now?
Yes.
I will talk about your checkered past now.
Sorry.
Now that I know you have something to lose.
I'm now in the middle of an background check, like an investigation, so I have to be extra careful. So I currently work as a contractor for the VA.
Ah, nice. Cool.
Yeah.
So you get to like deny people their fucking health all the time? That's tight.
No, I'm an analyst, so I'm strictly data. Like, I don't do anything like that. But no, it's crazy because on Laugh Finder, that episode, I didn't get to do it with you. You were actually not able to be there that day. I did it with Tommy and the gang. And
I did get to
funny.
Listen, though. I listened.
Oh, you're so sweet. I had such a good time. Big Mildred with the stoma. that was great. But it's so funny, yeah, that you and I met. For those who don't know, Eric and I met because he was the host of a comedy competition I did about a year ago.
Yes, and it was, you came in third place, and then I made you pick the winner so I wouldn't be the bad guy. That was fun.
And that has haunted me for about a year. But funny story, so that person who came in second.
Yeah, I'll say it, Josie Marcellino. I'll name drop. I'm not scared.
So Josie, unfortunately, was in the hospital about 2 months ago. So Josie was sick, and I was, you know what, I'm trying to be a better person. Mm-hmm. So I drove up to Baltimore to see Josie in the hospital, and she was kind of scared for it just a little bit. She's like, you know, I don't want to die. Like, I hope I'm okay. Like, whatever. And I was like, well, if you want me to end it, I'll put a pillow over your face, and as I do it, I'll be like, this is for Magoobies. And she loved it. So I think that was a bridge builder. You know
what would have been fun is that if she did ask you to do that, you're about to take the pillow, and then instead you just did the other guy, like you did her the first time. That would have been good. No, it was fun.
That was a wild night.
Hey, you made listen, truthfully, I thought the guy you picked won. So it was a tough pick. I just literally didn't want to be the one to do it because I had known Josie for a couple weeks, and I was like, I'm not gonna be the bad guy. I'm not gonna do it.
Got it. Well, and you know what's funny is Charles, that was the guy. Charles and I both lost in the finals this year or this past year. So
yeah, but prior to the apocalypse.
Yeah. So, you know, all the comedians are out of work, and I may not have won, but I still have a job. So who's the real winner? You know what I mean?
Suck a dick, comedians.
Suck a dick. Like, it's super funny. I got letters 2 weeks before the outbreak really took effect. Like, oh, like, we're not accepting you for the comedy festival this year, or I thought about it, and I just don't know if you're really what we're looking for this show. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then all of of these shows got canceled, and they're like, does anyone want to pay to see us online? And I'm like, oh, give a fuck.
Oh man, yeah, it is. It's been really rough, man. This quarantine is slowly driving me insane every single day, and I feel honestly when I the only thing I find comfort in is the fact that it doesn't just suck for me, it doesn't just suck for some of the people around me. It sucks for the entire world.
Yes.
Like there's not one person in the world whose life doesn't suck as much as mine right now. So I take some comfort in that.
Oh yeah. Well, and I told Eric, I love the podcast. It's been a huge comfort to me. You guys talk about movies and stuff that I love and I find funny. So you guys have been a nice presence in my life during the quarantine. So.
Aw, Ashley, stop. Now I have to change my underwear. This is ridiculous.
I truly believe in the Dead Kennedys credo of give me convenience or give me death.
Yes.
And when it comes to like, if they really did quarantine me and if I did lose my job because of this stuff, I really wished I'd rather see lots of people dying.
There you go. Well, Jeremy, once again, you've shocked everybody on the show. And
I'm just completely honest. You know, if life has to be inconvenience, I'd rather see people die. That's what it comes down to.
I see both sides. So,
Jeremy, are you single?
Do you want to know? Hey, no, Ashley,
I'm still married until death, which might be very soon. So.
That's the biggest shocker of the show is that Jeremy's taken. That is, there's nothing more shocking or revealing that you'll hear
on
here.
I'm not going to lie. It kind of like, it did hurt me a little bit that I'm like, these two dudes are married and I cannot lock down an open micer who lives 10 minutes away.
Yes. By the way, I'd love to get into that because we're going to do a two episoder here and I want to jump into tonight's episode because there's a lot of stuff. I got to We got to get to the card that you sent me. There's all types of things we need to talk about still.
Can I make
so,
a quick suggestion for Ashley?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Maybe like a matchmaker and maybe hook her up with Michael Friedman.
Michael Friedman? You mean Michael Friedman? No, that's a horrible thing. Listen, if Jeremy's playing matchmaker, you've hit lower than fucking shitting through a hammock on the list of sexual things that you'll do, okay?
I'm pretty sure he's not taken.
You haven't been the shit-y or the shitter in a hammock. You can't take a date from Jeremy yet, okay?
All I want to know, does he have investments in gold or silver?
Yes. It's funny, the guy that Jeremy brings you, he's like, doesn't have gold and silver, but he's big in the frankincense and myrrh department. Let me tell you, he's a myrrh baron.
I found you a sheik, he's got oil.
All right, well, ladies and gents, let's get into tonight's topic, all right? Tonight, we're going over the 1987 classic. Another of one of the trilogy, the John Carpenter apocalypse trilogy films, Prince of Darkness. Now, Ashley, I guess maybe you knew this, maybe you didn't know this. We're fucking huge John Carpenter fans here. I would say probably my favorite movie of all time. We've already done it on the show, but The Thing, it's up there, is one of my favorite.
So good.
I go Thing, and actually, Thing is probably my favorite horror movie, and because it's not a horror movie. My favorite John Carpenter movie is They Live, though. I fucking love They Live. Beginning to end, it's just one big old chef's kiss.
Hell yeah.
But this one I hadn't seen in a really long time. I remember seeing it in the 90s, and I haven't revisited it until today. So
awesome.
I'm here. What makes you love the movie Prince of Darkness so much, Ashley?
So I first saw it, I think I was in sixth grade, right when I moved to Hagerstown. And at that age, you know, I loved horror movies. And no one else in my family was really into them. It just kind of depends. But there was something really creepy about it. You know, it was like midnight. I think I was probably watching Sci-Fi Channel. And I just, John Carpenter is just so good at these soundtracks to his movies, and just the gore is good, especially like when you're new to that type of thing. It's just so well done. I love that metaphysical, creepy, you know, otherworldly type of evil.
I will say out of all Carpenter's films, this one is I think has the coolest atmosphere that he creates. You know what I mean? He creates a good creepy atmosphere in this one. I'd say even more so than Halloween or even The Thing. Mm-hmm. The Thing even has, as much as I love that movie, it doesn't feel as fucking creepy as this movie feels.
Yes. I would agree with that. It's almost like the environment and the unseen evil that kind of builds up, I think there's like a heavy atmosphere. You feel kind of crushed by whatever's coming. Very almost claustrophobic, which I love.
And now, Jeremy, you have you've met one of the actors or more from this movie, Jeremy. Who would you like to shout out and give us your little stories about? Get on your mic. We can't hear you.
I met him. What was it? The last.
Who did you meet first? Who?
His name is Peter Jason.
Oh, so you met Peter Jason. He was also in They Live. He's the guy who's like the head of the resistance.
Yeah. And as you can tell in the movie, he's pretty much exactly the same person. And, you know, he's so nice. And you feel like he's just going to hand you like the special alien glasses any minute and, you know, lead you to like a table full of Uzis.
Yeah. Hey, you know, one thing we don't really I guess disclose about this is the aliens that they talk about in this movie. I know I'm kind of jumping ahead a bit. Are they the They Live aliens?
That's a great question. And it's interesting, which we can always talk about this later. But it is interesting that then we also have Mouth of Madness, which is the third in his kind of weird sort of trilogy. It's odd because you're kind of like, is there a connection? What is he trying to say with all three? I don't really know, but that is such a good point. I love to think about it. So I don't know.
Is Big Trouble in Little China part of that trilogy?
Yes. In our hearts, it is. In our hearts. Well, there are a lot of crossover actors in this. Obviously, the guy who plays Walter, he's in Big Trouble in Little Chinatown.
It's Victor Wong, because I loved him a few years later in Tremors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe we can charge people to see this thing.
You know what's funny? I call guys dicks graboids.
Well, yeah. So
I'm in love.
So if you look at this movie, right, almost I'd say like more than 50% of the actors in this film are also in other John Carpenter films, right? So you have Donald Pleasance, who's obviously from the Halloween series. Mm-hmm. You have Victor Wong from Big Trouble in Little China. Mm-hmm. You also have Dennis Dunn from Big Trouble in Little Chinatown as well. Mm-hmm. You have Peter Jason, who Jeremy met and didn't really tell us anything about him other than he was nice. And then
what's interesting is I guess you'd call him the lead for this movie, or kind of one of our main focus. It's Francis Jameson Parker, but I think he goes just by Jameson Parker.
Correct.
I kept confusing him with what is his name? Tom Atkins, because they looked so much alike almost. But
I see
Tom
him. It's
Atkins,
the mustache.
John must have like a type for what he visualizes in his movies, like these people, because they look so identical. And then Tom was in Halloween 3.
Yes, Season of the Witch, classic Carpenter film. It's actually not directed by John Carpenter, but
right.
It is a part of the Halloween series. And honestly, former episode in our archives was Halloween 3, which I don't think it's even close to being the worst Halloween. In fact, I'd put it as the third best Halloween. I'll say it.
Actually, it's one of the first and only horror movies to make me throw up.
Oh, yeah?
Wow.
Yeah. So I know I can't even like explain why, because I know it's not crazy gory. Mm-hmm. But when the pumpkin like mask eats the kid's head from like the inside out and it rots, I don't know like why, but it made me puke. That's...
It's probably the burning rubber that season people puke.
Oh, gross. He didn't wash his hands.
Actually, the thing that bothered me about Halloween 3 is when the robot gouges the guy's eyes out, but then also breaks the bridge of the of his bones between his eyes.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
that's the part that disturbed me the most. So.
Shockingly gross. Like you don't expect that movie to be, and then you're like, ugh.
I mean, gouging his eyes out is bad, but breaking his bone, that's mean.
I think the grossest part of Halloween 3 is just seeing Tom Atkins be sexy. Like, that is the grossest. Like, seeing him as with a finely oiled chest is, like, the most uncomfortable I've ever been in cinema.
But even though John didn't direct it, like, you see a lot of parallels to both movies as far as, like, our leads need to be, like, shirtless a lot, and we need to see them with these mustaches and let you know that they fuck.
Hell yeah. Hell fucking yeah. It's also worth noting, hey, Jameson Parker, right? I only know him from one other role, and that's from the 90s TV series JAG, if you guys are familiar with that. I don't understand how he looks older 10 years ago in this than he does in the like is he reverse aging? It makes no sense at all.
I thought the same thing.
Nice.
They fill Ashley in. She's no way having listened to every single episode. Is that Tom Atkins was the only celebrity that I've met that I felt being touched by kind of uncomfortably.
Yeah, Jeremy. We had a whole episode about how Jeremy got me too'd by Tom Atkins. So
let's just say when I got my picture taken with him, he had his hand on my back and he was kind of stroking it in kind of a little friendly way, and I was like,
and then you looked at him and just went, "Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Stop! Turn it off! Stop it!
You're a stranger."
All right, so let's jump right into
I also tell Ashley about my other favorite celebrity is the guy who played Count Gore Duval on the evening DC horror shows back in the 80s. He's like 90 something years old now.
Oh my god,
he looked like Count Dracula, but he did kid shows and he did the horror show at night. So like he's DC.
I didn't know that.
He's like Captain 20 during the daytime, and he's like doing dressed up like Dracula doing the kid horror show at night. I'm at a show, and he's getting a picture with like probably like a 60-year-old woman that worked at the hotel, and I just see him do the biggest grab ass of this 60-year-old woman. I'm like, man, he is a man. Wow. So just kind of destroyed my childhood at that moment. So,
it's gotta be fun,
you know, like watching like. It's kind of like watching Fred Rogers and Fred Rogers like rubbing up on somebody. Like, glad
you really are my neighbor. Can you guys send me a picture or a link? Because I actually don't know who that is since I didn't like kind of grow up in that area. So like, let me know. I want to see a picture of this guy.
Yeah, I can.
You have to be like 50 years old to remember him. He's like aging.
Yeah, later. Send it to me. I want to see.
I just think it's funny that as that 90-year-old guy, he goes over and gropes some 60-year-old woman, and he's just like, "Did you see that hot piece of young pussy I put my hands on? Ooh, she was 30,
she was
30 years younger than me."
Oh yeah,
Robin.
I was a grown man during Prohibition when you were born.
You know, like he calls up his buddies on like the old style like wind up phone that has to start like a fucking Ford car from Ford Model 1, right?
The crank.
And then he goes, he's just like, "Yeah, Gerald, you're not gonna believe this. Yeah, uh-huh, 60. Yeah, I mean, she was born after the Depression." Good bit. So the movie opens up, and we get to see a priest who's found dead with a mysterious box left on his chest. Donald Pleasance is the priest who goes and picks up this box. He's very puzzled. I'm sorry, you broke up there, Jared. Can you say that again? Good talk. Okay.
Whatever you sand person.
Okay, got it. So, upon examination, inside the box is a giant silver key. We also get to briefly see our protagonist, Mr. Brian Marsh, played by Jameson Parker of the show JAG that we talked about, who somehow is reverse aging like Benjamin Button in real life. Next, we get to meet Professor Howard Byrack, who's played by Victor Wong, of course, of Big Trouble in Little China fame. I do have a little audio clip of Victor Wong teaching.
Fruit rots, water flows downstream, We're born, we age, we die. The reverse never happens. None of this is truth.
Unless you're Jameson Parker. That's...
Take a bite to classical reality, because our logic collapses on the subatomic level into ghosts and shadows.
Oh, shit.
This is a special subatomic a bullshit class.
Can you imagine having him as your professor? Just like, oh yeah, that crazy short Asian guy with the weird eye. Yeah, he's teaching my my graduate class.
You have to make sure that you start the course off with bringing an apple in for his funky eye.
Professor.
The other thing is, when I saw this movie, I was like, the other thing when I watched this movie, I was thinking, this is the only time he's ever worn a suit in his entire life.
Yeah. Fun fact, he died the day after 9/11.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Never
that
forget.
That was it. He was like, I've seen everything.
That's actually, I actually celebrate 9/12, and it's because of his death day. That's I never forget. So, in this,
I get that. I have a picture of him being taken down by graboids. Hanging in my house.
Now, a trained John Carpenter eye will also recognize Dennis Dunn. Go ahead, Jer.
Can I ask Ashley to say, that's the tiniest graboid I've ever seen?
That's the tiniest graboid I've ever seen.
And when she says graboid, she means dick. So,
yeah. Ah, nice. Well, duh.
I can feel the vibration.
It's like a large clitoris.
Hey.
So you'll notice in the class here, you could see John, the trained John Carpenter eye will also recognize Dennis Dunn from Big Trouble, and you also get to briefly see Catherine Danforth, who's played by Lisa Blunt, who will be one of our other main protagonists of the film. Now, next we see old man Donald Pleasance, who's only referred to as the priest in the script. You never actually get to learn his name, so I will just call him Donald Pleasance, because I feel weird calling him a priest. He uses the church.
You know when you're like a real pothead?
Yeah. Oh yeah, is that when you're
you know
a real pothead?
Real pothead is when your favorite actors or actresses are both Emily and Nancy Blunt.
That's you only listen to Blunts. My favorite running back is LeGarrette Blount. That's just everything is weed based. That's your ultimate stoner thing.
Yeah.
Good bit. I like it. So he goes and takes the key and uses it on this, goes to a basically run down derelict church that looks like it's in the hood of like Long Beach, California. And then
Compton.
Is it Compton? Is it in the streets of Compton? Yeah. Eazy-E is just blasting his 6'4". So I did actually read like some of the facts about it, is that this was in like a really shitty part of the town, and that Donald Pleasance got lost trying to find his way to this church they were filming at, and was so terrified that he had to get a personal driver to come drive him every single day to the set. So
I'm hoping that they had to put like one of those bracelets on like he was the real president, but eventually they found it on a bum. He's like, I'm the president now. I'm no president.
So we get to see Donald Pleasance use this giant key to open a large iron frame door within there. He enters in, but we don't get to see what he sees. Later in that night, we get to catch Brian creepily watching Catherine from afar outside of a building. It is creepy. There's never a time where a guy with a giant broom, with a push broom mustache, can just stare at a woman and it'd be comfortable, right? Unless you're Ashley Pontius and you do
but
have
it's
a 401k.
Like, he never talked to her. It's so weird. Like, we never see him talk to her. He like hides behind trees and he's like, oh, look at that. Like, and I'm like, you're how old in this movie? Because we know he's a graduate student. We know everybody in that is a graduate student. So I'm guessing he is supposed to be in his mid to late 20s, if not early 30s. And you're hiding behind trees like, oh, it's a girl.
Yeah, it doesn't fit with his look, right? Because that character, like the character he plays, is the type that sends, like, now would send you a dick pic and then immediately say, "I sent you a pic of my dick. Please respond." Right? Like, he's that guy. He's not hide behind the bushes. He's very open. He goes on.
I don't know.
He goes on Ogle Me and introduces Peen first.
No, see, to me as a woman, he, to me, is an open micer that's, like, way too friendly and then, like, says something a little creepy and then immediately is like, "Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Was that okay?" And then he just starts slowly taking over your social media and then he sends you creepy text messages and then he kills your cat. So.
R.I.P. Well, at least that seventh cat is still going strong for you, Ashley. And you guys are really going to tie the knot any day now. I can feel it.
He's got that pickup line when he first meets her, like, "I've been masturbating to you for months now. Of course I know your name." Yeah. I feel as if I know you.
Yes, he has that look that he'd be like going through her garbage and being like, "It's that time of the month."
He's like, "I've been seeing all those other guys you've been fucking. I figured out, how do I get into this line, you know?"
He knocks on your door and like says, "Hey,
where do I pick a number?" Well,
he brings you a box of tampons right when you're about to start and he says, I noticed you switched to pads last time, but I can't finish my blood shrine unless you do like 3 or 4 more of these. So if you could just be respectful and please use them, I'd really appreciate it."
Yes. Yes, he, like, as, like, a passive-aggressive move, he sends her condoms, and he's like, "You should be using these."
You had me at Blood Shrine.
So,
can we go back to the beginning with the special magical box that the priest dies with?
Yeah, but tell us about it.
Yes.
Instead of a key, it's an actual coupon for a Blockbuster video. Saving this for when I died for somebody special. Oh no, it's actually a key to the door to hell. So
it just has a. Well, I mean,
I just
this,
love the way he died.
Very.
just slowly.
I mean, if it was
slow death, where his arm.
I mean, a realistic horror film, right? What should really have happened is, like, inside that box, he opens it up and it's just like, and it's basically GPS coordinates of where all his child pornography is that he can burn. Like, that's more realistic, I think.
Good job, Eric.
Thanks, guys. That's funny. That's what Good I'm job. Here for.
Make sure you let Kevin out so he doesn't die in his cage. No.
Please make sure you feed my boy pussy Kevin. Otherwise, I left out a bowl of food, but it's been weeks since I fell ill.
Well, you open the door and it's a human centipede he's been working on.
Oh, God
has forsaken us. Let me out.
So Donald Pleasance writes a brief letter to the Vatican asking, telling him about some strange phenomena that's going on. A nun then goes to Professor Byrack and pleads with him to come meet with Donald Pleasance.
He died before his appointment with the Cardinal, but he left a diary. You must help us.
Ooh, so a plea for help from Please. Donald Pleasance. Please. All of the world's child pornography is at stake. All of it.
Are you there? God, it's me, Margaret.
Next, we see Brian watching TV as he hears an ominous clip from the news.
Of this supernova has immense significance to the scientific community. Particles collected date from pre-Cambrian times before man walked on Earth. Light from the explosion was hurled through space at 186,000 miles per second and is just now reaching us across the vast expanse of the universe.
Ooh. So a supernova from pre-Cambrian times, and who more appropriate than somebody who's going to have experience in the future with pre-Cambrian type beings than Mr. Byrack. Am I right? Tremors reference? Okay.
Hey.
I love that shit. That actually is good. I actually never picked up on that until now.
There's only one kind of supernova I like, and that's a champagne supernova.
In the sky, baby. Yeah.
It takes 100 million years to get here, but I'll be waiting for that champagne.
Good old Donald.
I also loved the ants.
Oh, yeah. All the ants that are crawling
on the
back
of
it.
The TV.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first time. Mm-hmm. Well, we see in one prior scene to this, there's like they're outside of a building and there's a big ant pile out there. But yeah, now they're inside. They're moving around. The Prince of Darkness controls all of the the creepy crawlers, which I don't really like because you know what? We need them as part of our ecosystem. So the last thing, I feel it really sheds a bad light on the ant community. Like, you know, they never showed this dark version of A Bug's Life.
I actually like being able to blame Satan on all of my choices. Like, I love being able to be like, Satan shit in my pants. Like, it's out of my control. Like, he did it, not me. And Satan forgot to pay the electric bill again. Satan.
Stupid
Satan. I think it would have been great to have, like, a voiceover of, like, all the ants, like, hey, you know, I feel like taking over somebody's soul, you know, maybe making them bring on the Antichrist is with all these bums on the street,
hey,
you know?
Hey, Lou.
You know what I mean?
Hey, Lou, I got marching orders from the queen again. Oh, what is it? What is it, Larry? We got to go hollow out this guy and use him like a fucking meat puppet. Is that fine? Again? Like... So, next,
I've always wanted to try human. I'm so tired of eating vegan.
So, Pleasance and the professor head to the derelict, rundown church, and he tells the professor this:
"He's the guardian priest. Apparently, he lived here for over 30 years. Once a week, he would venture out for food, and every day, he opened this door."
So he opens this door and they head down a long, winding staircase to the basement. They follow a large chamber filled with candles and a giant green cylinder in the middle.
Only the members of this forgotten sect, the Brotherhood of Sleep. Those of our sons, even their very existence, was kept from the Holy See.
The Vatican didn't know. The guardian priest would keep the secret.
And before he died, would pass it on to another. The sect had enormous power and authority. Their actions were never questioned.
So they get to this big room, and there's just a fucking giant green cylinder that basically looks like a lava lamp from hell, essentially. It's just green and fucking space jizz. That's all that's inside of this thing. Looks like it could make a full set of Ninja Turtles and a Master Splinter. And it just glows this weird, ominous green color.
Can we also say, yes, well, can we also say perfect quarantine movie? Because they're like, the priest only ventured out once a week for food. I'm like, I'm all about that life right now. I get it.
This is the year 2020.
Prince of Darkness, Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah. Broadcasting to you from my mind. Can you pick up an extra box of Tampax and some Fritos?
If we could only tie this movie together to make a sequel somehow, incorporating both the Ghostbusters and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
There we go. And then Daddy won't need pants
That's
anymore.
Dope.
So they come across this this.
I'm pretty sure the Vanilla Ice is available.
You think so? Listen, Rob Van Winkle owns a very lucrative home renovation company now, and he's not going to put that at jeopardy for the Quality Time podcast.
Well, it might cost several hundreds of dollars to get him, but I'm pretty sure we could work it out.
Hey, I it's funny when you're talking about celebrities, I just happened to be looking at, are you familiar with Cameo, Jeremy? I feel like you don't know what Cameo is. Okay.
Hello, word up.
Oh, okay. All right. So Cameo is like a site where celebrities get on, and you can pay them a dollar amount, and they will give you like a happy birthday or something like that. So I started to see which celebrities are on there. Billy Zane has some really good ones, but he's $500 a shout out.
Because he can't make money any other way.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, all the people that pay for it are all people who are fans of the movie Demon Knight, who are just like, okay, hey, can you do the line from Demon Knight? He's just like, actually, I don't like to curse. Ah, fuck it, I'll do it. And then so he fucks around, he has fun, right? But I started looking, Gary Busey's fucking cameos are a 10 out of 10 to go through and watch. First of all, he not only will say happy birthday, he gets out a guitar and actually plays it and sings you happy birthday, his own rendition of it. It's fucking absolutely wild. It's everything you would think a Gary Busey cameo would be. You get, I feel like you're going to get your $300 worth for a 30-second shout out of him.
Every time I hear Gary Busey's name or hear him talk, anything related to him, all I can think of every time is when, oh fuck, why is his name escaping me all of a sudden? He died. He was a great roaster. He once told Gary Busey that he looked like Nick Nolte fucked a Clydesdale.
Greg Giraldo. That's who you're thinking of. Fuck yeah.
Yes, Greg Giraldo. I've never been able to forget it. It is still so funny.
Dude.
By the way, thanks for adjusting the camera so that we can see your pussy.
That's not my pussy. That's my fupa.
I'm talking about your cat in the background. What are you thinking about?
Jesus.
Oh, hold on. There he is.
Look at
I think
that.
I put my vibrator away, so we're good.
Nice. So, all right, we got a couple more things to go over before we end this episode. But they go over to this sacred text that's sitting in front of the green thing, and he tells Byrak a little bit about this sacred text.
The original text has been distorted over the years.
Distorted?
Rewritten, writing upon writing, sometimes two or three times, and improperly erased. You can still see the old writing.
It says, for a good time, call Ashley Pontius right there, but it's scribbled out, so you can't read all of the numbers.
That actually happens a lot.
So
put their name in a lot of bathrooms.
A lot of bathrooms, a lot of the back of people's ticket stubs, sometimes written in the dirt on my car.
So next we see Walter and Catherine walking around talking about science stuff. They are fucking huge nerds. And it's funny because they're talking about science in a way that only John Carpenter's crazy ass could write about science. It's very interesting to listen to. But I can't imagine how John Carpenter gets pussy. If this is like, he's just like, wait till I whiner and diner with these quantum mechanics notes. it's fucking horrible. So,
all the years that like Adrian Barbeau was like fucking him, was like, man, this guy better make some more fucking money because he is a fucking moron. Oh my god.
It's the synthesizer. She's like, his logic is shitty, but those fingers.
Oh, by the way, another shout out to pretty much the entire film we're listening to is at the Chiller. I got to hang out with Alan Holworth, who actually did the soundtrack to this. And I think I was that close to actually smoking weed with him, too, when Chiller got shot.
That's awesome.
And we were outside and we couldn't even go back in. And he's pretty damn awesome. Finally, I found out from him that he actually is part of a Pink Floyd cover band, too.
Oh, and, nice.
We talked a little synth because I am big into synth now, and my DX9, but he's like, yeah, I have my Prophet. My Prophet is like one of the original Moogs. It's like got every fucking big dial, so that's like everything you adjust by hand and everything. So
gosh,
that's awesome. Crazy.
I got a picture of him with my Pogo shirt.
Fucking rock on, dude.
He was awesome.
So awesome. Professor Byrak.
Oh yeah.
Professor Byrak leaves a note saying that he wants his top students all to meet up with him this weekend. Brian and Catherine are actually both on that list as well. And they finally actually talk. The very handsome Brian finally gets up the courage to talk to what I would consider maybe like a Pennsylvania 7, right? Like, she's not, like, Catherine is not like super, like, unapproachably hot. Is that just me or no, right?
Wait a minute. If she's a Pennsylvania 7 and I live in Pennsylvania, what the fuck am I?
You're a 7.5. So, but listen, Ashley, you're built like the women I like, okay? So I have a very different taste than most. So,
I judge.
So you're saying I have a chance to single white female your wife, like, just murder her, start making your kids call me daddy. Got it.
I judge every woman just like Randy Quaid from Kingpin, where, like, a woman is, like, too skinny, like, she's not gonna be able to produce more than 4 children.
As soon as you started saying it, I knew what line was coming, man. I fucking love Kingpin. He's fucking so stupid.
And also, my nipples are like rock diamond solid because I just opened the fridge. So, yeah.
Oh, God. You know, there's one line in Kingpin. I mean, Bill Murray is so great, but the fucking line where he finally meets up with Roy in, like, the present, and he's just like, Roy, are you still mad about that hand thing? Listen, I said I was sorry. I meant it. And it's like the most insincere, shitty thing to say. Like, I just, this is the lack of sincerity in every part of every word that comes out of his mouth is so fucking good. So, they
reminds me of comedy all the time.
Yes. God,
this is funny.
So Brian and Catherine chat a bit, and he finally asks her out to dinner, and she says, okay. They go to talk to Professor Byrak. He tells them to bring their stuff, but keeps them very much in the dark that they're going to go to a derelict fucking church to battle the forces of evil. next, we see Professor Byrak outside the derelict church, where he sees a homeless woman, almost frozen in time, pointing upward towards the sky. And as you kind of pan in on her, you can see that she just has fucking ants crawling on her face. And it's pretty fucking creepy. But this lady, who's one of the derelict bums outside, not as famous as another one we're going to get to shortly, but she's just like, every scene that she has, she just has bugs crawling on her. Like, it's just like her only role in the movie is like, hey, are you willing to be an extra? How much shit can we just have crawl on you? And then the whole movie, she's just fucking teeming with vermin.
This was the precursor to Fear Factor.
Actually, my favorite story involves my favorite actor up in New Jersey, who's kind of like a street bum. And just to let you know, we found out that he had been living in the cab with his brother, because he's kind of like a street bum. That's not the bad part.
Yeah.
The bad part is that his brother gave up the fact that he had had crabs, and that during the nighttime he caught him taking his crabs and eating them. And finally, we had him fess up to the fact that, no, he had not been eating them. He had just been putting into his mouth to crush them to kill them. So he wasn't eating his own crabs. So that made it all good.
I like that he has his own ecosystem, though. Like you get it. He was just like, you don't understand. The crabs eat me, and I eat the crabs. We feed on each other as a symbiotic universe.
I can't. That story is so disturbing. I'm going to become an uncircumcised penis. Look.
Oh, look, it's Brian Preston. Ah, oh, nice. Solid.
One person person I haven't slept with yet. I'll put him on the list.
Yes. Fuck yeah. Oh, yeah. He has a fucking sleeping bag penis, let me tell you. So, next we see...
don't write off Michael Friedman. You know, yeah. He needs love.
So we...
Send me a picture.
So we get to hear a little bit more about, from Donald Pleasance speaking to Bayrak.
He lives in the smallest parts of it. In the atoms. Smaller. Invisible.
He or as Mike Patton would say, smaller and smaller.
In the sum of its parts. We must translate this book. You must prove it scientifically. Convince the outside world.
Typically. The outside world doesn't want to hear this kind of bullshit. Just keep it locked away. You've already managed that for 2,000 years.
No prison can hold him now.
The part I don't understand is why Donald Pleasant's so, like, hung up on the fact that we have to prove this scientifically. Yeah. But why? Like, in what part?
Yeah.
In what part he's just like, as long as science can explain this, the world is not going to end? It makes... I don't understand. It makes no sense.
And also, I feel like he's used that line before in, like, a Halloween movie about Michael. Like, no prison can hold him now. I'm like... Does he just whip that out with anything? Like, he's at the grocery store and he's like, no grocery store can hold me now.
Oh, that's a good one.
I just can see him going literally anywhere, just constantly.
I also want to mention the part that he had in Golden Child where Eddie Murphy just starts talking down to him like, oh yeah, you just blow your nose there, blow your nose in your hand or something, because he's just like this disgusting old man.
Yeah. I haven't seen that forever.
So next we see Brian waiting outside of her class like a fucking creeper, waiting outside of Catherine's class. He asks her for a cup of coffee, and that cup of coffee immediately turns into hot mustachioed sex. Brian wakes up the next morning and goes out to take a breath of fresh air and observes a pretty odd sunrise. The moon is still visible in the skyline. He comes back in on Catherine and says, I don't want either of us to jump to conclusions. Or, I'm sorry, Catherine says that to him. So she's basically saying, hey, listen, I know my fucking red puss was fucking so fire last night. I don't want you getting all fucking attached to me, okay? I'm young. I'm fucking ready to fuck other people than you. That's like, and by the way, keep in mind, she's the Pennsylvania 7 we were talking about before. She doesn't get to talk to him like that, okay? She's lucky to have Brian at this point, right? Like, he stepped down to her, okay? I don't understand how she's coming at him like this.
Yeah, I mean, I am kind of surprised he's so into her and not the blonde chick who was eating in class, because a girl that eats during class is always good to go.
Oh, that, you know, she pokes. So for sure.
I just wanted her to say like all of her past experiences, like, just say what my daddy always said to me, just keep it quiet.
God, Christ.
Well, yeah, I love the weird vague thing they constantly do with each other, where like they won't say specifically what the issue is or what's going on, but he does the whole "who hurt you" type of thing, and I'm like, ugh, girl, run, please.
Ugh, gosh. So, I think that will bring us to an end of this episode of Quality Time. Tune in next week so you can hear more about the Prince of Darkness. This will be our good break point. But, hey, Ashley, tell the good people at home where people can find you, where they can look you up, and all the types of shit that you do.
Hey. Sure. So you can always follow me on Instagram and on my Facebook fan page at Ashley Pontius Laughs. Obviously, right now, there's not really a lot of shows, but if you keep an eye on my pages and my Instagram, you can see that I'm doing a lot of digital shows. I'm obviously doing a lot of podcasts that I get to share with people, which is great. So always feel free to come by and say hi.
Fuck yeah. So check out Ashley's
shit. I want to thank every person that...
Go ahead, Jer.
I want to thank everybody that has joined. Midgets are awesome, whether it was through this podcast or not. Thank you very much, including the actual little person or dwarf or midget that joined, which made my day.
Oh, yeah. Midgets are awesome. You guys can check it out. It is a good... Jeremy, I like that I spend weeks and weeks... I spend hours of my week preparing for this show, and if I ask Jeremy to do one thing, he very rarely will do it, but I will check on Midgets Are Awesome, and he is religiously updated it all week instead of doing any type of show preparation this week. So I mean, I would need you, that isn't me shitting on Jeremy, that's to tell you how important Midgets Are Awesome is as a page, and for you to go join it, because I'd say it's your passion. Am I right, Jer?
As Brad Williams would say, midgets equal happiness, and it is 100% true with me. So
well, hey, listen,
like, I will one day get SARS and Mensa and coronavirus, but I will have a midget by my side and everything will be okay.
Fuck yeah. Well, hey, you can catch up.
Well, I just got my razor. I just got my razor shipment, so COVID crisis is managed.
Hell yeah, baby!
Woo! Well, hey, this is the Quality Time Podcast, the official sponsor of the coronavirus. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com, Eric with a K, comedy with a C. Check all that shit out. Jeremy, take us out.
Oh, it's a different dimension. We have to prove it was science.
I can marry that up. Okay.